It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Really hoping I was going to remember what I had for the open. I remember. I saw a movie. But I'm going to talk about it up front because it's only 14 minutes long.
The movie.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And a fun little side note to this, either Azure Talon is familiar with this movie or Azure Talon should be familiar with this movie, should go check this movie out. I got this movie on one of my various free streaming services that just puts ads in things so that it's free, that shows crap movies that were easy to get hold of. You know, your sub Tubi levels. Which is where I find a lot of my crappy movies. I like that. But I found this one. It's from 2015. As I said, it is 14 minutes long. Weirdly, when I started it, I had not noticed it was 14 minutes long. But there was no trailer. And nowadays, I'm starting to do more with like, just fuck it. Let's just start it and see how the first few minutes are kind of thing. But it's from 2015. It's got some good, some well-known actors in it. It has James Vanderbeek from Dawson's Creek, which, to be fair, is not super hard to get. But it has Katie Sackhoff. And in 2015, that is post-Battlestar Galactica. So that's pretty impressive. And it also has, in a small role, I actually didn't notice until I saw the credits, Brie Olsen, pre-Captain Marvel, but already as an actress, like not a household name, but no. It is unrated.
Brie Larson, did you say?
Brie Larson, yes. Sorry. I said Brie Olsen, who might be a porn star. And it might actually be Brie Olsen. I can't remember. Again, I only saw it in the credits. But either way, those are actual people.
Yeah.
But it is 14 minutes long. It is unrated. It has a lot of swearing. A lot of violence. Like in blood and shit. And like people getting shot in the head and stuff. And some nudity. Not a lot, but like a definite, genuine, explicit nudity. Not just like somebody's butt in three frames or whatever. The movie in question is called Power Rangers. And it is based off of the TV show for children, Power Rangers. It's a fan film.
Okay.
And this streaming service put it up. And in the beginning, they had big disclaimers that was like, this is a fan-made film. It has no association with Saban Entertainment. And we're not allowed to make any money. There were no ads during this, or before, after, middle, anything. And it's essentially set in the near future after the Power Rangers disbanded, grew up, and then the bad guys, specifically the Machine Empire from later seasons of, well, from early, but not the initial seasons of Power Rangers, conquered Earth. Mm. And it is in particular one former Power Ranger who apparently switched sides interrogating the last living Power Ranger, but one, upon the location of Tommy, the former Green Ranger, who is in the wind and causing troubles. And so it's a bunch of shots of like what happened to all the others. And it's like hardcore, intense, gritty stuff, but still Power Rangers. And still, as much as I can remember, because for many years, I was a big Power Rangers fan. I eventually bailed because I got too old and they were on their 12th season or 87th season or whatever. But I was really into it for a while. They kept it within canon. Like, it fits within the world of Power Rangers. And they got these people to do it. And again, the movie, by definition, could make no money. And it's not only did they get these names, but there's some decent special effects. Like, better than your average sci-fi TV show. It's super weird. And I had seen it a couple times going through, and it had Katie Sagov and James Van Der Beek, and it said, based on the TV series Power Rangers. And I was like, but how? And I found out it's a fan. And it has to be, like, I didn't recognize the director's name, but he has to be, like, somebody in the industry who's very wealthy, and, like, these people are, I don't know. It's just weird, and it's so outside how things are supposed to work that I really enjoyed it just for that reason. Like, this is a slick, well done, well shot, well produced, well acted short film that does sort of the Watchmen thing for this old kids adventure show, but isn't like, an, like, Watchmen is, like, spoiler alerts for people, Night Owl is meant to be Batman and things like that. But, like, it can't be Batman because, you know, copyright reasons and shit. Well, actually, he was working for DC. Probably they were just like, fuck no, you can't use Batman. But whatever. This is, like, literally them. That's so weird to me. It was very fascinating.
I mean, Nathan Fillion made a fan film for, I want to say, Uncharted.
Oh, that would make sense.
And
Star Trek's got a shit ton of them.
Yeah, made by
some of which have famous, original cast members in them.
Yeah, right. Made by famous people. Some, like you said, some original cast members are in it.
I've never actually watched any of these. So, and this one is just such a, like, the Star Trek fan ones are like, it's Star Trek. And from what I can tell, they're just decent Star Trek movies. So it's like, yeah. They couldn't or didn't want to get the shit together to work with Paramount. But they're still, like, Paramount wouldn't be like, oh my God, I'm kind of pissed off you did that, like, kind of thing. This one, I mean, if Kaim Saban ever found out about it, he'd probably not super happy. Except, yeah, you know, maybe.
I mean, the thing Nathan Fillion did was not something that, you know,
drastically.
Yeah, it was an homage for sure. That didn't really change anything. It's not like what you're talking about, where you're going to, like, completely turn it on its head and make it very different.
But, and so well, like, there's at least one, like, very involved fight scene that is incredibly well choreographed and is not unlike a Power Rangers fight scene involving a lot of Power Rangers. For people who haven't watched the show, especially in the beginning, a lot of it was based around the fact that they were using trained gymnasts. And so there is a lot of gymnastics, and I don't mean that pejoratively, I mean literally, in Power Rangers fight scenes. And this one also had that combined with, you know, fast moving John Wick style headshots and shit. Like, it was so weird. And it's a good length because, like, the novelty is the only, like, I don't need to, this shouldn't be a series or anything like that, but just for 14 minutes, I was like, holy shit, are they really doing this? And they're really doing it. And it's very cool. And in it, I mean, it's on the level of action movie dialogue, but a lot of it is a huge debate over, again, Watchmen style, a huge debate over whether or not Power Rangers ever should have happened. And whether they were exploited child soldiers, which comes up several times because they keep being like, why did it have to be teenagers? Why, you know, all this kind of thing. And actually has a weird twist ending, which is kind of cool. But The reason I mentioned Azure Talon is years ago, Azure Talon got the idea to make a grown-up, gritty, R-rated Power Rangers RPG campaign.
Mm.
And I think he did it. I don't remember. And I have no idea if he's seen this. All I know is I can't remember how many years ago it was. And I also, it was probably longer than that. So he probably hasn't seen this. But I saw this movie and I'm like, yeah, that would inspire me to make that. Like, this is definitely like, holy shit, this could be a whole deal. So as you're telling you, I'm now realizing you probably haven't seen this. So you should look for this. If you're desperate, I can tell you the shit streaming service I got it on. I'll need to look it up because I don't keep track of their names. But as you're telling, yeah, if you still want to run that kind of shit, you should check this out. It will tell you some things. I was amazed. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world whose side hustle is J. Crew, L.L. Bean, enemies to lovers fan fiction. We've got a whole universe we've created. We've got teams of grad students pumping this stuff out. We haven't figured out how to monetize it yet, but we're going to work on it. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 618. You know, if you talked for like four more minutes, you would have talked about the film longer than the film actually was.
That's definitely something I've done in my lifetime with feature length films.
Yeah.
Via a couple of accidents recently, I have been looking at a lot, and I've done this in the past. I go through sort of cycles. I've been watching a lot of YouTube videos that are explaining the lore behind various fandoms. Actually, a lot of it has turned into Star Wars lore. That wasn't initially what happened. It kind of went that way. But so now it's YouTube's tossing a lot of them at me, and I'm like, oh, you know, 12-minute video on the history of the Sith or whatever. And then other ones that are like, this is an hour long. Like, I don't think I've spent an hour of my life thinking about the niche section of this particular fandom that you're talking about. I'm not going to watch that because I'm not willing to dedicate that much of my time to learning about this. So, but I have discovered a couple of cool new channels related to that. A real neat one. You might want to check this one out. Actually, you might want to check both of these out. There's one called Variant Comics. And it's this dude is apparently a pretty popular channel. And it's this dude who just talks like he does. Dives into the history of comic characters and things. But he also is just into comic stuff in general. So like most of the ones I'm watching are the history of a certain character or whatever. And it has a section on their origin. It has a section on the most interesting story arcs or most significant story arcs. And then at the end, it has a reading list. Like if you want to see more of this character, the coolest bits are in this comic and this annual and this issue.
Nice.
And often at the end of these, he also has ones about recent comics that have come out that he thinks are worth buying, and he'll talk about that a little bit. So that's been pretty neat for me. I got there because it's been tossing a Doom Patrol one at me for a while, because all of my devices are friends, I guess, so it knew I was watching a lot of Doom Patrol. And then it was on his channel, and then from there I went, which was fascinating, by the way, to look at the actual comic book history of Doom Patrol and what was there in the beginning and what there wasn't there in the beginning. For those of you just joining us, this isn't what the show is about, but this is the level you should expect. We have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people, human people, as far as I know, but no judging, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with whatever the crap they want. And the hat magically just forwards the emails to us. We read them, talk about them. That's about it. Often we don't pull it off, but I'm determined today. We got to get to one today. So I have truncated my week in my head already. So, how's your week been?
Just school. We've done a few things, but Nothing I can either remember or feel.
I was gonna say, pause. Have you seen? No, I know at least one thing.
What is it?
You, despite making it sound like you weren't going to, have watched at least one more John Wick movie.
Had I only seen two when I talked to you before?
No, you had only seen one.
Oh.
And said you didn't particularly have an interest in seeing the others.
Oh.
No, and yeah, then you started texting me in the middle. Sorry, sorry. I should rephrase. You started fucking live tweeting to one person.
But that wasn't
during the middle of that.
Okay. But this wasn't this last week. That would have been the week before. And I guess I just,
we must not have talked about it last week. Mm. But so now you have seen the trifecta.
Yes.
All right. And.
Okay. Well, again,
I know you came up with a lot of statistics about why the assassin organization just wouldn't work, but otherwise,
I mean, really, we were watching them because Abby wanted to watch them. I mean, that's why we watched the first one. Yeah. And I did enjoy watching them with her. And if she wants to watch the fourth one, I'll watch it with her, whatever. I think I did, while I was talking to you, I think I did sort of start to appreciate some of the over-the-top kind of humor of it, which I'm not sure I was really got that at first. You know, the whole thing about, I don't know if I can talk about any of it because it's all spoilers.
Yeah. Especially with the sequels. But you don't, because the sequels very much build in a terrible way on the first one. So you don't want to spoil things.
Well, except again, if you look at all of that in sort of a humorous way, like when I started to think of it as being, I don't know, I can't really talk about it without spoiling it, I guess. Right. But I just started to think of it in a different way, and it was a little more enjoyable then. And even the stuff that you're talking about that they build on, that's
Boba Fettish.
Yeah, and I agree with you about some of that stuff.
I didn't do that on purpose. Oh my God, is this episode going to be called Boba Fetish? And I cannot have been the first person to have ever coined that phrase.
Oh no,
I'm sure to have been said before.
Yeah, but I've never heard it. So
that's my roller derby name right there. Jesus. Oh, nice.
Anyway,
this episode is great. No matter how the rest of it goes, I love this episode.
I actually kind of liked all of that stuff. I mean, it was dumb, but the whole thing was dumb to me, so it wasn't like more dumb. So
all right, so end of the podcast and our friendship. All right, I'll just hit the button. No, sorry, go on.
I'm not a fan or anything, and if it weren't for Abby, I wouldn't watch any more. But I can, I'm not suffering through them or something. That's interesting.
And I haven't, like, Trish is determined to see the fourth one, and I expect it to be absolute dog shit, but I'm also totally fine seeing it with her. Whereas some things I'm like, yeah, you're going to have to watch that yourself. And I will admit, I was very taken, no pun intended, with the first one. And again, probably because of what I saw as some novelty aspects in it, which is always a good hook for me.
Right.
And so that may have, to a degree, clouded the remaining ones for me.
Mm. Because there's nothing really new in them.
Well, and like to your point, all three of them are hokey as shit. But for some reason, like, the first one didn't seem hokey to me, whereas two and three were very obviously hokey. And so not only was that a problem, but like, it also did that stupid nerd thing where, like, it retroactively made the first one worse in my mind.
Right.
Because I'm like, this was really cool when it was just mysterious Lance Reddick. By the way, another reason to watch the John Wick movies, Lance motherfucking Reddick. I was reminded of how much he is the perfect person to be in absolutely everything you ever make, because I'm playing Horizon Forbidden West and he's in that. And seriously, I don't know anybody who can so seamlessly go from comedy to drama back and forth and just kick so much ass at both of them, but he's really good at it.
Yeah, he's just one of those guys that elevates whatever material he's in.
Underutilized in my every time he shows up, every time I see him or hear the voice, the unmistakable voice, I get very pleased. I remember watching the first John Wick, actually, and he shows up and I'm like, oh my God, I don't always remember his name. I think I finally have it now, but I'm like, it's that guy. I love that guy.
Very good. And he is good also, in a video game. That was good to point him out.
John Wick 2, Parabola or whatever it was called, gave work to Mark Dacascos. And I'm always happy when somebody gives Mark Dacascos a job. I love it. I'm not going to say he's a tremendous performer, but I love him. And I'm always happy that somebody's paying him.
I mean, don't you think, though, here's another thing I could appreciate about the second and third movies, not for myself, but just for what they were doing. Don't you think in the second and third movies, because a lot of sequels fail even in this basic thing, don't you think they gave to viewers what they liked most about the first movie, more or less? I mean, don't you think they gave the true fans what they really wanted? Because some sequels yes. can't even do that. Some sequels can't even do that.
I would even go so far as to say they gave me what I would have thought I wanted. Because this is the problem with Weeping Angel / Boba Fett syndrome. Is it's built on a genuine desire. When I see the Weeping Angels, when we see Boba Fett, I'm like, ooh, cool. I want to know more. No, you don't. I think you do. But the mystery and the nebulous nature, your imagination can make Boba Fett into anything cool you want. Anytime that probability wave collapses, it's not going to be as good. It's
not going to be as good, no. Well, that's interesting you should say.
I really wanted to know more about the society, and I learned more about it, and I'm like, this society is dumb and makes no sense.
Right. Well, so there is this thing where someone's going to make a movie or a sequel or whatever, and you'll hear people say, and I've often said this because I often think this, who asked for this? But there are times, you're right, where someone has asked for it, for sure. Someone has wanted it, but like you just said, you only think you want it. There's kind of some kind of Schrodinger's film out there that's not going to materialize when the probability wave collapses, for sure.
And the problem is you can't recognize a Boba Fett until after this has happened.
Yeah, that's kind of true.
Because the only time when it's not Boba Fett is when the creators very deliberately designed a thing in a way that you would never know, and that's the whole point. And sometimes if they do it well enough, you know that. You're like, that dude was cool, and he's supposed to be mysterious.
Yeah, yeah, right.
But every other time you're like, oh no, tell me more. Because why would you not? But it's only afterwards you're like, I should not have asked. It also struggling with the thing I may speak to from a different perspective recently, or after this. It just so clearly, they made John Wick. They were only planning to make John Wick. John Wick 2 and 3 and presumably 4, which I think it is safe to say are all a single storyline. John Wick is self-contained. 2, 3, and 4 are a storyline. And it's just not... This doesn't always happen with books. Happens with stand-up a lot. A stand-up comedian hones their craft for years, decades, pulling everything from their childhood and whatever, and they make their first album, and it is raw, and it is really there. And then the next one, all they have to pull from, unless they left huge chunks of their life and experience behind, sorry, my cats are dancing, is whatever's happened in the last 2 years since released the first album. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. It's always going to be their second best idea we're lucky. Right. And if we're lucky, it's going to be the same person's second best idea when it comes to movies. Exceptions can happen, but they are rare. The Good Place is a tremendous example of an exception.
Sure.
But it's one of the only ones I can think of off the top of my head.
That reminds me of when radio came along and television too had this kind of issue.
That reminds you of when radio came along. You are fucking old.
Yeah, I'm going to explain why.
When I was a child, we didn't have radio. But then one day.
Radio and television both drew all of their best entertainment ideas even some of their news and document, I mean, even some of the nonfiction material from vaudevillian culture and performers. There were a lot of vaudevillian people, not just performers, but people who were just involved in vaudeville in other ways, who didn't want to have anything to do with radio or even later television because they were so certain it would be a fad. And one of their big reasons for thinking that wasn't just because they were short-sighted or something, but because of just what you were talking about. When people performed on stage in vaudeville, they often had to work on that act many, many times. Sometimes they would be C-list and B-list before they got to an A-list act, and they would have perfected that. And the idea was that if people are doing their A-list stuff on radio or television and everybody's seeing it, then they can't do it again. Then the next thing they come up with, there's no way it's going to be A-list because they're not going to be able to go through that process. So they thought the entertainment and information and whatever else radio and TV had to offer would be so much worse, so much lower quality than what people could get if they went to the theater, that it would never catch on.
And especially when it comes to movies and TV in this day, because we are such the content mill and chasing the algorithm and all that. The only way you can avoid, there's 99.9999% of all movies and TV have one of two formats. One, they make something awesome, and so then everybody's like, make 1,000 more of those. And it just, Or for some reason, they are given a chance to make something not great. And due to privileged nepotism, blind fate, a writer's strike, whatever, they are allowed to continue. And they do eventually polish up, because there are TV shows where the best season is like season 3 or whatever. They happen. But almost always, it's because they started out. And the problem there is I didn't watch it because I started watching it and it was so I skipped it. But the tiny sliver of exception is either if you are so outside the system or so important in the system that you have the ability to say no to them. Versions I can think of, I am confident, despite its huge popularity, there will not be an Everything Everywhere All at Once 2. Everything Everywhere 2 All at Once. And Furious. And like the one good decision Damon Lindelof ever made, which is he was done with the Watchmen TV show after that season. And they set it up for sequels. They could have done it with somebody else, but he said he wasn't going to do it, and they decided not to take the chance, and I'm very proud of them for that. But it's so rare. You have to either be unseen by the panopticon of show business, or be such a powerhouse, which means you've already done the shit we're talking about time and time again, and now you have the power to say nope.
Well, I think there is also something to say, and not just for entertainment or information, but all consumer goods. There's something to be said for the public sort of lowering their standards because they know they're getting it for free or cheaper. And it's like, yeah, this isn't as good, but I can live with it. You know, I think that happens too. I think the public
we call that pulling an MCU. I'm really worried. I haven't seen Wakanda Forever yet. I'm waiting until it's on Disney Plus because I'm a lazy fugger.
Isn't it?
On Disney Plus? I don't think it's, is it now? Is it? If it is, they have not done a good job talking about it. They have been advertising that it will show up this year on a Disney Plus commercial, but I don't think it's there yet. But I'll check after this.
I haven't seen it either.
And friends of mine saw it and we're like about it, which who the fuck cares, because these are friends who we have vastly different tastes and stuff. But then they said something which not only resonates with me, but is something that has a nuance I wouldn't have expected them capable of. What they said to me, they looked me in the eye and they said, it's an MCU movie. It's not a Black Panther movie. And I got very bad chills when they said that. And I'm like, fuck, really? But Coogler's there. And really? But we'll see. I'm still going to see it. But yeah, I am trying to notch down my expectations pretty fast. Because that to me is a very specific and insightful statement. So we'll see. But
are you going to talk about your week before you run?
Yes, it's all still about shit I've watched. So
good.
Strap in, everybody.
Ready to go. Oh, I don't have any straps. I'll just hold on.
Okay.
I'll just hold on.
Yeah. Put your head between your knees, kiss your butt goodbye. We don't do nearly enough bridge lurches on this podcast. We used to do those in the dining hall in college.
Yeah.
We'd be sitting there and somebody would say, "Bridge lurch left," and we'd all go to the left, which didn't really work because we were all facing different ways around the table. But, you know, we had fun with it. I'm still wrapped around the finger of Doom Patrol. I still don't understand why. I'm really enjoying it. I'm really getting into it. I'm having to stop myself from watching more than one episode a day. Because I want to stretch it out. And also, like I've said before, I like to sort of process what I saw and things like that. I'm just really liking it.
I think Doom Patrol is compelling in a postmodern kind of way. I mean, I could probably.
I wanted it to be, but I was thoroughly miserable the first two seasons. And to my wife's credit, the first episode of season three, I was also miserable. And so was she. And she was like, "It's clearly not going to get better." And she left. And then the very next episode, I'm like, "It's better." So again, I think it's probably me. but I saw half a movie that we need to talk about.
Half of it? Why only half of it?
Because it is long as fuck.
It is
3 hours and 5 minutes.
Oh, okay.
And so we almost were going to finish it. We were like, maybe we'll stay up a little late. And then we looked and we're like, oh my God, there's still an hour and a half in this thing. Yeah, we can't do that. So, but we will. And, oh, wait, one smart aside. Ever since Jazz said it, I can't unsee it. And it does explain so much about Doom Patrol. Cliff Steele sucks. The character in the TV show.
Yeah, agreed.
Sucks! Like, to the degree that the just elimination of his character would make the show 10 times better. And
unfortunately,
don't get me wrong, all the main characters in Doom Patrol are sometimes idiots in a way that's really annoying, and sometimes assholes in a way that's really annoying. Cliff Steele is consistently both at the same time 90% of the show. And what's worse is the 10%, it's clear they're trying to sort of make him the heart of the group. They are failing. Like, he's off. And I love me some Brendan Fraser. I don't know the dude in the suit, but, you know, he sucks just really a lot. It's kind of annoying now that I could, like I said, I can't unsee it now. I'm like, yeah, he's the problem. I even like Cyborg now, and I fucking hated Cyborg for a good season and a half. But I even am into Cyborg now because Cyborg is actually doing things and growing and changing and not always being stupid and or terrible.
And it's sad that he sucks because I think there's a lot of potential for that character. And
of
they just
course,
squandered
they
it
put
all.
So much into all of them. I mean, the most boring character who I spent a lot of the first two seasons just being like, I don't care if they're here or not, is now incredibly compelling and complex and interesting and dynamic. And you know who I'm talking about, I bet. Actually, the second most boring character also is at the moment becoming my favorite. To be fair, the plot is kind of focused on them, but still. He just sucks. Anyway, it's moving. For some of you, we have missed this window to such a degree that I will not be particularly surprised if when I tell you what movie this is, you say, oh yeah, we saw that, because it was huge a while ago. Watched it now. I didn't really think I was gonna watch it. I didn't want to watch it, but I wanted to watch it. But then I mentioned it to Trish and I was like, I don't know, it sounds like maybe it'd be fun sometime when we're high or something. But then the other night, she's like, let's watch that. And I'm like, sober? I'm like, yeah. So we started watching it. And at one point in this movie, Trish says to me, and I wholeheartedly agree. She says, baby, she calls me baby. She says, I'm so glad we decided to watch this. In fact, I don't think I ever want to do anything else other than watch this movie.
Wow.
Yes. If you haven't seen it, you're seeing it. If I have to come over to your house and grab you by the neck and make you watch it for 3 hours and 5 minutes, you're seeing this movie. Okay. If you can watch fucking all three John Wicks, you can watch this. It's called... It's called RRR. It is an Indian-made film, and it is amazing.
And it was award nominated, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, it was.
Yeah.
With good reason. And here's where I'm an idiot. Because my thinking is an Indian made film. I've seen some. Largely, I've seen Indian like genre pictures rather than like epics or action things and stuff like that. I've seen like horror movies and stuff. But I know the sort of Bollywood formula because stereotypes are a thing. Like, they're really long. They've got dancing and singing in places that, for our Western sensibilities, make weird narrative sense. And I'm just like, it just sounds like a slog. I'm sure it's cool in places, but it sounds like a slog. And that's why I didn't want to, or wanted to watch it when I was high, because everything that's sort of middle of the road seems cooler when you're high. No, it's amazing. The action scenes are incredible. The romances, or should I say bromances, are incredible. The music, Trish wants the soundtrack. It's fucking amazing. The dancing, and there is fucking dancing, and it's awesome. It's, this movie is so, a dude, during a fight scene, a dude throws a cheetah at another dude, like a live cheetah, like as a weapon. By the way, no animals were harmed in the making of this. They are all very clearly CG, but. And that's even actually more impressive in some ways. I don't know how you make it look like you're throwing a live cheetah at somebody when it's presumably just a tennis ball. I don't know how CG works. Like, and the CG is good. Like, it's not perfect, but it's fairly seamless where it's used. And it's on a level of, like, the original Matrix trilogy would have been happy with this quality. Like, yeah, it's good. And it's unbelievable. And it's so not like a Western narrative. Like, I kept trying to think of, like, how to explain it. And I keep wanting to go back to, like, it's not subtle, which is not fair. Maybe it's fair. It's not subtle. It's still nuanced. But, like, I'll tell you what. Near the end of the half that we watched, we saw somebody having, like, a flashback of memory for just, like, 30 seconds or so. And we still don't know what that is. And that was shocking. Because nothing in this movie happens that they don't tell you right then exactly what it is. I mean, this is a movie that essentially the soundtrack acts as a Greek chorus. Like, during montage scenes, there are songs telling us what is happening that we are watching. But, like, really good songs. And occasionally hearkening back to things and stuff and also saying, like, oh, but how will it go later? It's fucking unbelievable. And over the top action, like, you would not believe, but, like, really creative, not super violent. Like, there's, I mean, there is some blood, it's not, but it's not like it's way less violent than Power Rangers. Like, there is some blood, but it's a you know, it's the equivalent of, you know, it's bloody, like, I guess Roadhouse is bloody, or like an American action movie. Like an old school action movie is bloody. And it's just unbelievable. The language is also fascinating because we eventually found out we're watching it in Hindi because that's the default on Netflix with English subtitles. It wasn't made in Hindi. It was made in a language whose name escapes me because I had never heard it before. That is a specific, I think, regional tribal language that is spoken in certain states of India. So even Hindi was a translation, which is why, like, a lot of the lip syncing doesn't match up at all. And I've talked about this before with Hindi, both in films and with real life conversations in Hindi that I have witnessed in person. They have English words thrown in a way that I don't see the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are words that is clearly like, oh, when the English language came to this country, they didn't have that yet. So now they've used the English word. But there's other things that I'm like, surely they had a word for that. And then there's other things where they use the Hindi word in one sentence, and then they use the English exact same word in the next sentence. And I'm like, what are you doing? I don't understand it. And like I said, real people speaking Hindi, I've seen them do this. I don't understand it. So there's a lot of that. But also, it's one of those movies where people are supposed to be speaking different languages, but what you hear isn't necessarily different languages.
Right.
But there are also times where people are speaking a language and another person, another character is translating for someone in the room. So it sometimes gets very confusing in terms of how they picked what I'm hearing, especially since I now know none of it was the original audio.
Right.
And so that's fascinating. But I'm telling you, like, I don't, it's one of those things you just have to see and experience, because it's, I would never have thought, like, the movie is exactly what I thought it was, but I fucking love it. It's, I recommend it to everyone in the world. See it. It's amazing. I will say this, a couple things here. There's very big disclaimers at the beginning saying this is fictional. The specific places, the people, it's all fictional. Any resemblance to anything else, purely coincidental. The editor, the director, nobody was trying to say anything about anybody. It's all fictional. Except for some basic geography. Like, some things take place in the city of Delhi. And that's a real place. Although the first thing we saw, it said outskirts of Delhi. And Trish is like, see, Delhi's a real place. I'm like, yeah, but it has no outskirts. It's just Delhi, 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 nothing. But anyway, it's set in colonial India. And one of the two main characters, I had an issue with people seem to be calling him by different names. And I was like, what's his name? And I looked it up while we were watching, and it was sort of a first name last name thing, and that may be cultural, I don't know, because there's a lot of things in this that are culture specific, which is why sometimes what they say on the screen and what the subtitles say very different. But I noticed that the name of this character had a hyperlink on Wikipedia, and so I clicked it, and it took me to a genuine historical figure in India's history with a very similar but definitely distinct name. So I have concluded that this movie is inspired by, I think this movie is as real as the average American biopic, which is to say not very much.
Yeah.
Hardly at all. But I think it's as real as shit that in this country we say is real. So, but it's fucking amazing. But I bring this up because everything is over the top. Everything is larger than life, and it's awesome. But that means that the white people, the colonizers, are kind of cartoonishly evil. And I want everyone to know this up front, because it starts in the very first scene. And that first scene, not knowing that, is very jarring, because you're like, that's so fucked up. But then you're like, oh, no, that's the whole thing. All the colonizers are just the fucking devil. And that's like how they're supervillains, essentially. Trish actually pointed out, so Trish works with a lot of people. I used to work too. Look, ACT has a lot of people from India.
Oh, okay.
And Trish works with a lot of them. And one time Trish used to have her staff meetings, and she would come up with like a fun sort of icebreaker question. And I think at one point she said, she was like, who's your favorite superhero, or what's your favorite superhero movie or something like that? And at a certain point they got to like an Indian play, and she's like, oh my God, I don't even know if Indian cinema has superhero. Like this was very Western focused. I'm sorry. And the person said, no, it's okay. She's like, India doesn't really have superhero movies, but we have something similar. And she's fucking right, because this is essentially a historical drama, and people are fucking lifting cars and shit, and and there's just awesome, like, literally there's a barbed wire fence and a huge crowd outside, and they're like, go get that guy, and the dude just goes and jumps over the fence, but he doesn't have like superpowers or anything, he's just awesome. But like, it's wire foo levels of awesome. So in a lot of ways, this is like a superhero movie. But it's so good. I was yelling so much, like so many, like, whoa, oh yeah, ah, all this stuff the whole time. Is you got to see it. You got to see it, or I'll murder you in your sleep. That's not just to William, whole audience. Some of you presumably have already seen it, because like I said, it was a huge hit that I didn't bother. So if you saw it, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us what you thought of her. Fun thing, it's called RRR, but because of localization, everywhere it is, the R's stand for something different. In the US version, it's rise, roar, revolt. But in other countries, the R's stand for other things that begin with R in those languages. By the way, the opening title sequence happens like a half hour into this movie. We didn't even see it coming. We were like, wait, this is the opening? But like, so much movie has happened. It's incredible. It's incredible. And for people who aren't William, the two main character boys, who sometimes dress up real nice, sometimes take their shirts off also, they are pretty boys. They are very, 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 very muscular, very, very pretty, pretty. I like to look at them. And you will too. Not William. Because William has a little lockbox in his soul that he has lost the key to.
Not the only one.
Nope, you're it. You're it. The rest of us, this is 21st century. Man, be fluid with it. Enjoy yourself. Come on. But anyway, let's do, I'm going to do one. We only got a few. We could use some more people. Come on. Don't you love us anymore?
Then they'll just say, well, you don't love us because you don't ever read them.
Yeah. Well, lucky thing. I mean, it does get a little cyclical. We don't read them as often because we don't hardly have any. So people don't bother to write in because they know we don't read them. But whatever. All right. This is fun in all sorts of ways. First of all, huge blast from the past. This is the once and future hard hat number one, Mark McKibben.
Wow.
And the subject is questions for the Magical Talking Hat. So there's more than one question in here. So we're going to have to deal with that. Also, it's going to be fun because it's an email. So I'm going to read the whole email. And for those of you who have ever gotten an email from Mark McKibben, you should know why this is going to be fun. So, have you considered using an AI, parentheses, chat, CPT, comma, GPT-3, etc., to write in new questions? And do you have any concern that somebody else has already done so, taking away jobs from hardworking listeners? Signed, Mark McKibben, coffeebear.net. Quote, if I feel something strongly, I make a photograph. I do not attempt to explain the feeling. That is a quote from Ansel Adams, 1902 to 1984. And then it says, read carefully. By reading this email, you agree on behalf of your employer to release me from all obligation and waivers arising from any and all non-negotiated agreements, licenses, terms of service, shrink wrap, click wrap, browse wrap, confidentiality, non-disclosure, non-compete, and acceptable use policies, in parentheses and quotes, bogus agreements that I have entered into with your employer, its partners, licensors, agents, and assigns in perpetuity without prejudice to my ongoing rights and privileges. You further represent that you have the authority to release me from any bogus agreements on behalf of your employer. I'm no lawyer. Kind of think that would never, ever, 100% ever hold up in any sort of legal contest. but I'm no lawyer. I don't know. But I really don't think so. But it's fun to read. All right. First of all, this just shows how long it's been since you listened. William and I don't care about taking jobs from hardworking listeners because William and I don't have jobs. We understand jobs. If the AI is taking jobs away from our hardworking listeners, then they're just lucky like us now. They can just hang out. It's a better way to go. Unless you have a different opinion. Are you angry that AI could be taking jobs away from our listeners?
We're not paying our listeners, so it's not really an issue.
Equally fair point. They're getting just as much as they did before.
Yeah, I mean, they can work as hard as they want. It's up to them.
To be fair, we do pay five times as much for AI generated ones. But again, since that's nothing. That's an interesting idea. I don't know that we're a great fit for this.
Well, of course we are. Who better to answer emerging AI questions than us? Why shouldn't the two of us be the ones who teach AI how to get along with human beings, how to interact with the world? I mean, who better?
Okay. I am with you here. If AI are sending us emails that they want to be sending us with questions and topics and things that are pertinent to them, yes. If we just created a very limited AI to just pump out a lot of questions that look like magical talking hat emails, I feel like there will be a lifelessness to those emails that as hosts and as listeners, we will be able to tell. I mean, feel like there is a heart in there, but I fully support AI being able to possess that same sort of heart. And I think you're right. It would be awesome. It would be awesome to get an active AI listener base.
Sure.
I mean, it'd be awesome to get an active listener base besides the three, but especially if they were AI.
We haven't built a database out of the questions for the AI to draw from. So the AI, all the AI is going to have are its own questions, whatever those are. But why shouldn't we get to answer them? I mean,
I know I like that a lot. Let me talk to you though. Let me talk to you about something tangentially related, but not about this email, as I am wont to do. AI generated images.
Yeah, I've been working on that a little bit myself lately.
This is a thing right now. Mm-hmm. I have encountered it in a couple of places. In particular, I was watching an online sort of game show where people are trying to convey a fact that they know, and they have to type it in to AI art generator, and then other people look at the generated image and try and guess what the fact was. And it's ridiculous and kind of funny sometimes, mostly just ridiculous. But then also I've seen other people, but again, mostly sort of satirizing the concept. But recently, this is gonna be real. I'm gonna have to talk about this real circumspect.
Okay.
Recently, I was in conversation with someone online, a stranger, and they expressed a, let's say, niche interest in something that is largely frowned upon in our society.
Okay.
And in order to, and also not an interest I share. I want to make that clear up front, even though I'm not talking about what it is. But I think it's pertinent to how I responded to this. It is something that in the absence of having sort of artistic skill of their own, they found ways to get AI algorithms to generate images around this niche interest.
Okay.
That I found very disturbing. Oh. And on a purely conceptual level, I support this method of pursuing this interest and this use of the technology. But on a personal level, I was like, ugh. this doesn't feel like what we should use technology for. I don't know how I feel about this. And I clicked on the links they said about it because I didn't understand what they were saying. They were like, I got these AI generated images, and I was like, what? What? And I did. I was like, oh, ooh, ooh. And so I'm feeling really weird about it in general, but also very curious, not about that, but about the technology. Are there just like websites where you can just go and like type shit in and it makes, it does it? Or do I have to like buy MS AI art? That's,
I mean, no. You can go to a website and do it, you know, for free. Although the ones I've seen have ways, they have ways to monetize it so that the things it'll do for you are limited.
Yeah.
If they're free or whatever.
I remember when we were working at Applied Systems, I mean the collective unconscious of Applied Systems, discovered a website that would play 20 questions with you.
Hmm.
And it was really cool because it was pretty good at it. Like, not you guess them, like you think of something in your mind. Don't type it in at all and answer the yes, no questions honestly. And it was pretty good. Mm-hmm. And years later, I found out it was essentially a learning tool for a proto AI that became something famous. I don't remember, but like an actual thing, if I could remember it, y'all have heard of. And this was like the original basis for it. And actually, in college, we ran into some similar things. There's a lot of sort of free to fuck around with bits of web software that are actually basically feeding a machine learning tool. And to me, this seems similar. I would think you would put this out there and the algorithm you had created would gain sophistication by doing this.
Well, my experience is, so far, is you have to practice with it quite a bit to know what kinds of instructions to give it so that it gives you something at least approximating what you want. You can't go in
the
and
game
just,
show I watched made that really evident.
Right. You can't just go in and describe it how I would describe it to you, for example, and expect to get something even necessarily close to what you're looking for. And sometimes, you know, I've put in some very basic instructions that any other human being would understand, but that this thing clearly doesn't. So, you know, but people who work with it, right, are going to figure that out. Now, one of the ways that a lot of these free sites monetize is they give you only so many attempts or instructions like per day.
Okay.
So if you want to interact with the thing and give it updates to, like, they'll present a picture and you'll go, okay, well, they didn't get this part. So you reiterate something or you say it a different way. You've got to spend, and some of them are like credits. You can get credits to spend for each thing. And if you run out in a day and you want more, then you have to buy them, kind of thing. So if you don't want to sit there and pay for anything at all, but you're noticing that telling the thing instructions once or twice isn't enough, it's not going to be that useful to you. You'll eventually have to pay to keep giving it all the instructions you need to give it for it to give you a thing that looks like what you had in mind. Maybe it'll get better. I don't know.
The one that sticks with me for some reason, again, on this game show, the fact he was trying to explain, I cannot recall exactly. It has something, there's a connection between roller coasters and underwear. And it's something where, like, the inventor of the modern men's underwear was also influential in making roller coasters, or like the material they make it out of is the same. I don't remember. It was something like that. But so he typed in roller coaster underwear or underwear roller. I don't remember which one, thinking it would show images of roller coasters, but then put prints of like underwear over it. But what it did was just showed a bunch of underwear that was made out of prints of roller coaster shots. So they had no chance of getting it. So yeah, no, I can see. And a lot of them where, like, especially if you type it in like full sentence structure, you'll get all sorts of weird stuff. But this is totally like the 20 questions game. Like, I am not interested in this as a tool or as something I want to work with, or I just want to play with it. It just seems really fun to play with.
Well, I mean, I've seen some pretty impressive things, and I originally, you know me, I've been a person who for years I've had ideas that I want to visualize, but I'm not an artist and I can't do it. So I'll use tools like I used for the superhero thing when we were working together and stuff. I'll find tools that'll give me shortcuts. So I was very excited when this first came to be a thing.
And I'm pretty sure you're AI. So it probably is, you know, where you live, as it were.
But I wouldn't say that it now is it a, I mean, I'm sure that if I went ahead and bought or, you know, purchased a subscription, whatever it was, I'd be satisfied with that. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I will. Cause as I said, this is something I wanted to do for ages, and maybe I'll finally think to myself, well, all the stuff you've wanted to do for 30 years, now you can do it if you just spend $15 a month or whatever, and then maybe that'd be worth it. But for now, I'm just trying to find, I guess I'm not convinced yet that if I did spend money that it would be that much better. Or maybe I should just wait until the technology gets better, you know, and then I'll do it. I don't know.
But in a rare move to go back to the original email, Mark, no, I mean, there's a middle ground on the spectrum of emails. And on one end, nobody fucking sends us anything. And on the other end, sometimes somebody's like, oh, they want content? Okay. And they send us like 20 things that matter to no one, including them. And I'm not super fond of either of those. But like, in the middle, whatever you want. If you want to practice designing virtual intelligences or real rough machine learning or whatever, and you want to do that by creating something that produces emails you think are good to send to it, do it. I think that'd be cool. Do it. Or if the one I always think of is, I have so many thoughts that randomly pop into my head throughout the day, you know, shower thoughts, as it were, but they're not always in the shower. Send those to us. That's great. If you want to make up a Mad Lib, I mean, don't send us a Mad Lib. Well, you could. I don't think I'd be into it, but you could if you want. No, but if you want to like make one, and then just each week you're like, okay, I'm going to find a new person like in my house and be like, give me a noun, give me a place, blah, 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 and then send us that. I think that would be hilarious too. Like, we can, you get creative with it. I encourage our listeners. I love our listeners. I love the things they send us, except for Azure Talon. That's always true. I need to put that in the intro. And we love all our listeners except for Azure Talon. But I encourage you to get weird with it. Like, send us emails that you wouldn't think anyone would ever send to a podcast, like, or just crazy shit, or shit that you're just wondering about, or shit that you're too lazy to Google. I promise you, you will not get as clear an answer as you would if you Googled it, but, you know, have fun with it. And every once in a while you might, because William and I know a lot of esoteric bullshit. So we might just know the answer to whatever you, and they don't have to be questions either. Like, I also encourage you all to go to the magicaltalkinghat.com, tell us whatever you want. But there's a lot of comments on there that could also work just as well as emails.
Yeah, I'm realizing no artificial intelligence is ever going to send us a substantial number of questions.
Because
if they did,
because
if they did, eventually that AI would probably do something terrible, and then someone from the future would send somebody back in time to kill us, and we're alive. So it's not going to happen.
I mean, that's sad. It sort of depends on your view on time travel, which is the thing.
I was looking forward to talking to AIs.
I will go on record as saying I can think of at least one, and I think two, of our people who I know listen, who absolutely have it within their wheelhouse to create a rudimentary algorithm for making emails for the hat.
Wow.
So.
Oh, well, okay. So maybe we do interact with AIs, but they don't destroy the world. That's kind of hard to believe. That's far-fetched.
I assume mean, they just take will. Over the show.
Oh.
Especially now that we're doing video, like they can deep fake shit and stuff. Yeah, like, yeah.
They could totally be us.
As opposed to we, who totally BS. Last night, when I'm watching RRR, there's a bit where two people are communicating through hand signals. And it's, I don't know if it's supposed to be funny. Like, they communicate something that turns out to be very detailed via what I think are quite broad hand signals. But at one point I look at Trish and I say, hey, baby, they're communicating in ISL. What's ASL stand for?
American Sign Language.
They're communicating in ISL.
I get it.
I love that joke. Not as much as Boba Fetish, which now that we're at the end here is definitely the title of this episode and the title of my memoir. But yeah. Also, if you want to try your hand at your little fan fiction with J. Crew and LL Bean and Enemies to Lovers, feel free to put it in the blog. We absolutely may steal it for whatever business venture we create with that, but feel free. Go to the blog. Yeah, tell us if you've seen any of this stuff. Tell us your take on John Wick. Tell us anything you want to tell us. That's fine. And also write in and tell us or ask us anything you want. I am not joking when I use the word manifesto, baby. Like, I would love to see someone declare war on the government and their initial declaration happen via our podcast. That's got to be great for our SEO, if nothing else.
Maybe the AI will do that.
Oh, the AI will do that. Because here's the thing. We're going to go out in a ball of fire, either by being taken over by an AI or eventually being purchased for, I'm going to guess, 43 cents by either Disney or Hasbro. So, you know, why not make it the fun one? Everybody have a good week. Well, my birthday's happening this week. So on Saturday, think me happy birthday thoughts. But also bear in mind, I don't give a shit about birthdays. I'm not opposed. We're going to go out for dinner. I like getting presents, but know that I will like you no less if you manage to wish me a happy birthday, and I will dislike you no more if you don't remember to do it. So whatever you'd like. But in the interest of full disclosure for legal reasons, because that email from Mark scared me, my bogus agreement, birthday is Saturday.
The 21st, so, Saturday the 21st.
21st. And my sister-in-law is the 22nd. And there's a lot of birthdays right around now. I keep wanting to count back 9 months and figure out what is so sexy about that week. Because I got friends on the 18th and the 20th and me and some that share with me. Although, to be fair, after spending many, many years thinking that it was an amazing, cool coincidence that I had the exact same birthday as my father's sister. I mentioned it one day as an adult, AKA old enough to know better. And my mom was like, no, you know, I had a C-section. They basically gave me a window of a week. And so I picked her birthday.
Oh man.
And I was like, oh, of course you did. It was a C-section. And I knew it was a C-section. Those don't happen by surprise.
Not usually, no.
But it just had never registered.
Sometimes they're kind of an emergency, but I, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no. She said, like, they gave me roughly a week. And even then, I'm like, wow, I didn't know you cared so much about Aunt Marjan. And then I'm like, or she just only knew a few birthdays within that range, and this was her favorite one.
You know the little girl in the Addams Family who played Wednesday in the 1960s show?
Oh, No, I don't know her, at least not as far as I know.
She and I have the same birthday. She was born 11 years before me.
I think that's fun, except then it always makes me think about the birthday paradox, and that drives me crazy. I've tried, like, I can wrap my head around the goat problem, the money hall problem. You know that one where you got the three doors? Yeah. That one, like, it's still, I couldn't, like, teach it per se, but, like, I get it. But I have looked into the birthday paradox. I've seen the graph, the chart. I have no fucking clue. For those of you who don't know, it's that basically, if you get, by the time you have reached 30 people in a group, you are almost guaranteed two of them will have the same birthday.
Yeah, it's not a high number of people like you would think.
I think 30 is the one where the odds become like way, like not 100, but like 99 point a bunch of stuff percent chance.
You definitely shouldn't be surprised what happens.
And it is not a like cultural thing of like when births, it is a mathematical thing. Mm. And I fully don't understand it. Not even a little. And I've tried. And you know how seldom I do that.
Very seldom.
But anyway, this has been a lovely time. Join us again next week. Do all those things we were talking about. Go look at Aether Theater. Go look at CoffeeBear.net. I've been to CoffeeBear.net. It's been around for a very long time. I haven't been there recently, but it's got cool shit. So check that out. He's a coffee bear. He's Mark, and he's a coffee bear. Also go to smashwords.com. Pick up my book, Odd Wings. So I feel validated in my
life. Pre-order his book, his memoir, Boba Fetish.
Bobo Fetish. Well, shit, the sequel to Odd Wings is going to be put on the back burner now.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.